Welcome to the Power Play Podcast, where international cricketer Kyron Powell and marketing genius Jordan Shannon join forces, bringing you captivating conversations with the biggest players in cricket and business. Join us as we dive into the lives of current stars in the cricketing world, the legends before them, and those extraordinary icons whose performances changed the game in both cricket and business. Exploring journeys both on and off the pitch, the boardroom, and everything in between. Get ready for an exhilarating blend of cricket, life, and business insights with two insatiably passionate, infuriatingly no-holds-barred hosts, who, unfortunately for the rest of us, live and breathe this stuff for a living.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 20 of the Power Play Podcast. I'm Jordan Shannon, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Kyron Powell. How are you, Kai?
Oh, not too bad, John. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you very much. Well, there's no other best place... Well, another... No other way, better way of starting today's podcast to follow on from your rant after the conditions that you had. In Trinidad, and then you go and put on a batting display like that. So you can talk me through that if you don't mind.
Well, no, it's just a matter of patience, really. Obviously, Understanding that the conditions weren't, I guess, optimal, but what ended up happening is that the pitch got rolled and rolled. Obviously, at the end of the day's play, with the next day starting team continuing to bat, they chose to roll the pitch with a light roller. When we went to bat, we rolled it with a heavy roller. So, the pitch got better and better as the game went on. I think, obviously, still short of water, which sort of made it very difficult to bat with the new ball.
Right.
New ball sort of kept low and misbehaved and that sort of stuff. But as the ball got older, we found that batting became a lot easier. So, it would have been a really, really good pitch if they had prepared it, for the requisite amount of time required for first-class matches, at least. But having said that, it ended up turning out not to be too bad of a pitch as the days went on, as it got more rolling. And once you can get past the new ball.
Yeah. And so in terms of... So who won the toss?
They won the toss and decided to bat. Obviously, having the same notion that we did, that it's underprepared and trying to get better use of I guess what we both deemed as the good side of the pitch. Again, the groundsmen clearly know their conditions because they're used to playing, I guess, club cricket up there, which is a day and a half. Club cricket in the Caribbean is generally like Saturday afternoon and then all of Sunday. So the way that they prepared it would have been ideal for a club match. It would have lasted, it would have been fine, and the pitch was okay towards the end for us to be able to chase 300 in the second innings. It had to be relatively okay enough for us to do that. So it sort of worked out in the end. We'd have just, I can only imagine what it would have been like if they prepared it for a week. It would have been an absolute amazing cricket trip.
Right. From your perspective, how did you go into the game? Obviously, you were disappointed, obviously, when you got there, and I could obviously massively tell last week with the frustrations, and we talked in great detail about that. But how did you go about that from a mindset perspective, thinking, from being frustrated to then think, right, I've got to switch on here now, because at the end of the day, I've got a lead from the front, not only from a group of players' side, I think, but also opening the batting. How did your mindset sort of switch, or how did you go about,
Well, I think it's a lot of mental preparation for me,
right?
Especially this season. Obviously, batting with a fractured hand isn't easy at all. So I'm not able to practice or anything anyway.
Is that official now with that? Is he actually fully fractured?
Yeah. So obviously I'm not allowed to practice or anything, because obviously each time the ball makes impact on the bat, like it sends shockwaves through the hand, and obviously the hand won't heal or recover until the end of the season, when there's no sort of impact on her. And so, like, it's very jarring holding the bat and having to face even spinners at times. Like, there's certain times I'd have to leave the field of play because my hand just swells up and it's just extremely painful. So when I'm batting, I just have to, I guess, channel myself to know that, okay, you just have to get yourself in here. Take as much time as you need it. Ultimately, it's a 4-day game, so you don't need to rush it.
No.
And my biggest thing is that I've been trying to get off strike as much as possible, you know, just to try and watch a lot from the other end, get myself in that way. And just look to bat the entire day. I mean, obviously, if I'm batting for 2-3 sessions, I'm going to get a score, regardless of how much practice you've had or not. Anyone that's batting 2-3 sessions is going to get a score. So it's just for me to try and get off strike as much as possible and understanding my limitations, which I think I've pretty much worked out at this point now. It was just a lot of mental for me at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, looking at, well, firstly, congratulations. I believe, well, it's your 10th first class 100. But I think that, to be honest with you, annoyingly, over on the stream on YouTube was really, really inconsistent. So every time I tended to want to either watch you bat or Jimbo Bowl or Amari Bowl or some, it was a bit of a nightmare. So I'll be honest with you, it's not like I watched a lot of it, but you know, we sent obviously the league table through earlier, and you know, you're second in the table, and you know, in a great position now, but I just think that, for me, that century is absolutely going to be massive in the context of the whole season. Not because we're having a chat now and it's you, but you look at the time, you know, the situation with the wicket, and you look at the way the game sort of worked out. I think that'll give a massive boost of confidence for the whole team.
Yeah, I think... obviously, the position we were in the first innings, it wasn't great. And it's the first time I've ever batted with everyone in the team in an innings. So I think, you know, Emma was really upset that I got out. Obviously, staying out is something to keep there. Let the bowler be the one to get out. But you as a batter should never be the one to get out. So, yeah, obviously, I think that I should have attacked from the other end as well. So probably a miscalculation on my part. I should have probably attacked the leg spinner with the breeze going.
Yeah.
That way as well. It would have been easier than trying to attack the off spinner. I wasn't getting much turn. But having said that, I think that I was able to help to put the team in a better position, obviously, than if we sort of got bowled out for 180, 150, whatever the case is, because 259, I think, being 14 runs behind, sort of kept us right in the game, where we lost first innings points, but we were still able to be within touching distance. So we knew that if we could bowl them out for a reasonable score, we had a chance of competing, and also understanding the fact that we didn't necessarily bat well as a unit in the first innings, but still scored at, I think, 4 point whatever runs per over. We got 259 in 62 overs. So we understood that, you know, we understood that if we batted for 90 overs, if we batted for a full day, we could chase a score there. And it was just a matter of building partnerships and staying in. And ultimately, that's what happened in the second innings that allowed us to chase that 315 target that they posted.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked like at one point it looked like it was going to be a bit of a tricky chase as well, when Justin Greaves and Casey Carty got out, but then obviously Jimbo and Jeremiah Lew about it, you know, dug in and got you home. So
yeah, it was lots of ups and downs. Obviously, a chase of that magnitude is never going to be easy or straightforward. You know, you're going to have your ebbs and flows, but it's just a matter of just staying in the contest.
Yeah,
I think that's what we were able to do when you had that big partnership with Casey and Justin after both openers sort of fell early. That sort of settled the dressing room, and then, you know, you have certain breaks throughout the day, and going back and starting after a break, you're always weary or conscious of the fact that wickets fall off the bricks because batters that switched on and
yeah.
that happened. And then, you know, we were sort of on the back foot again, and we had a few more partnerships along the way that sort of got us through to that total that we required. So, I mean, I guess the guys understood what was necessary, what was required of us as a team, and we put together enough partnerships to get us over the line.
Yeah, definitely. And how are you getting on over there? Have you done much practice since? And obviously you personally might not be able to with the injury, but have the lads been getting out, managed to get out much in Jamaica? Is the weather okay?
It's blistering hot. One of our favorite places in the Caribbean. I mean, I don't think there's many people around the world that don't love Jamaica.
No.
You know, the amazing food, funny people, talented people.
Yeah.
So everyone loves coming to Jamaica, but we've had practice on Monday. Today was an off day, obviously, because of the heat and the workload of the guys.
Right.
I think all four games that we've played so far have gone into the fourth day, so the guys have really been pushed to the max. And obviously, just managing workloads throughout a tournament is as important as practice. Ensuring that guys are fit and fresh and ready to go for our next, probably what will be another high octane for the game.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a tough game. Would you say that Jamaica's strengths are more in the batting lineup or the bowling?
I don't know. They've been pretty inconsistent for the past couple of years. They haven't necessarily been having the best time of it. Based on the team I saw them put out in the last game, I'd definitely say more so in the batting. Their strength would be based in that department.
Yeah.
The bowling seems pretty inexperienced. Also something that you haven't really seen happening much in the Caribbean is that they're opening the ball with a spinner in a 4-day game as well.
Right, okay.
Because a lot of their senior fast bowlers have been injured, so it's just being mindful of what's happening throughout the tournament with different teams and their different tactics. The pitch looked an interesting one at practice yesterday. Nice lush green coverage. I think it was the same pitch that Jamaica played Barbados on with Craig Brathwaite scored 142.
Right.
And by all reports, it's supposed to be a belter of a batting wicket. So
right,
definitely
nice.
Looking to get myself in and just bat time. That's the key goal here, just batting as long as possible.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, looking forward to that. Is it Sabina Park?
Yep, correct. Sabina Park.
Oh, nice. So obviously just leading away from the domestic stuff, how have you did you watch much of the PSL final yesterday?
I actually did, because of the time differences and stuff. By the time we woke up, because Jamaica is an additional hour behind the rest of the Eastern Caribbean.
Okay.
So by the time we woke up yesterday, it was on, and I got to see the run chase from Islamabad. And I think just in general, the PSL is a really good quality cricketing tournament, you know, because Pakistan produces, just out of the blue, high quality, high talented level players each and every year from the PSL, whether it be fast bowlers, spinners, batters. And I think it's a very underrated tournament, but a tournament that has like a high skill level to it. So it's always good watching Pakistan cricket, whether it be internationally or on the domestic scene.
Yeah. I was so impressed with that, Osama Mir. I know he played in the 100 over here for Manchester Originals, but I thought the way that in a lot of, the games that I watched, I thought he bowled so well in such key parts of games. And for someone who's probably, I think he's only played maybe 4 or 5 international T20 games, his experience and the way he sort of bowled in those in game situations was really, really impressive. But I think I totally agree. It's like one thing that's a massive benefit of these franchise tournaments that get the coverage, especially in the UK, is that, you know, they unearth some really, really good players that don't get probably the exposure that you would see in the domestic scene. You know, playing first class cricket. So, you know, and it really opens that opportunity to play in franchise tournament cricket worldwide. Yeah. She's obviously something we spoke about loads of times on here and stuff, and it's great to watch. And you do, it gives people this real good opportunity to go and really, you know, make a name for themselves worldwide.
Yeah, 100%. No, I think the opportunities franchise cricket presents is going to be interesting for international cricket, but you can't stop it at this point because, as we've discussed many a times, players have to earn a living. Yeah. And you have to maximise that opportunity, just like a footballer signs with a Man United, greatest club in the world, or any other not so great football club. I'm sure they trade there for whatever period of time. You know, cricketers have now got the opportunity to do the same, and I mean it's exponentially more well paid than what you'll get from any international team. So you can't fault a player. I think in situations like in England or Australia, India, where those boards are able to remunerate their players to a higher standard than other countries, then you see players that become a lot more loyal, whether it is missing an IPL for a season or playing part of a season or probably not going at all. Other players can afford to do that, as you know, it can make a huge impact on, you know, someone being able to live comfortably for the rest of their life, or having to work 2 years after retirement from international cricket. So it is what it is at this point, and it's good to see the level of talent that is being produced on a global scale. Like the things that guys are doing now, the capabilities that cricketers have now, whether it be something as simple as just standing still and hitting a ball completely out of a ground, or you know, scooping a bowler at 95 mile an hour for six, it's unmatched.
Yeah, no, it is, and the way that they've, like, one massive credit to them all, who, you know, saying that this level of skill that they brought, and this, you know, from a batting perspective as well, like it's 360 now, fully, to pace, to spin, to, you know, bowlers bowling left arm round, to, you know, the way they can do it, it's been impressive, and it is down to, you know, the way that they practice it and stuff, you know, it's credit to them and stuff as well. And you know, with the IPL starting later this week, that seems to be the pinnacle franchise tournament.
Yeah.
And you look at, you know, I was going through the squad lists today, you know, just trying to predict who I think will be up there and things. The quality of players in that franchise tournament is just phenomenal.
I mean, I think the IPL is going to get to a stage where it's going to be sort of like the NBA or NFL, where you have, even the Premier League, where you have maybe 18, 20 teams and played over like a 5-6 month period, where guys are contracted to that team and then go away and play maybe in their own domestic T20 competition, or, you know, guys. So it'd be sort of a football thing where you get an international call up, as opposed to you're an international player that plays in a T20 league. I mean, it's just, that's definitely the holy grail of franchise cricket, the IPL. So, obviously, high quality system will be on display again when it starts.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the way that they've gone about it, how they bring in sort of high-profile coaches, I think, has had a massive impact in it as well. I know, obviously, the financial benefits are there and stuff, but the way that they bring in the coaches and things, I think it's had a real positive sort of, like, impetus into the franchise tournament. And I think that, you know, similar to what we talked about then from the PSL side of things, the way that some of the young Indian players get that opportunity to work with, you know, some high-class coaches, but also, like, the top players around the world, it's not a fluke that India are the way that they are across all formats in terms of the skill levels and the way that they go about it, because they are mixing with a lot of these players on a regular basis. You know, when you think about, you know, for instance, I can't remember who it is, who Pat Cummins is playing for, But you think about how he will be within that team, and you've got potentially, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds aspiring fast bowlers who will be have that set period of time with him where, you know, you just be all ears, you know, following how he does things and, you know, talking about certain deliveries and things. And you, the impact it has on that, or that young group of players within that franchise will be huge.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Indian domestic structure now, even at the age group cricket and just the talent that they're able to produce year in, year out, based on, as you said, the IPL and the benefits of the IPL. So it's not just, we have the best players in the world playing in this. You have the best coaches in the world, hands-on on already talented, highly skilled young players, but now having access to a Ricky Ponting or a Justin Langer or Stephen Fleming, these coaches with high levels of international acclaim that can teach you things that, you know, obviously you wouldn't have been able to have access to before, and you'd have only had access to, I guess, the local Indian domestic coaches, which I think India does a great job with anyway. Yeah, you've got Rahul Dravid as the head coach. You've got Vivius Laxman in charge of the NCA. But to have, again, also such reputed coaches, you know, you think the likes of Mahela Jayawardenas, Kumar Sangakkara's, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. You name it, they're all at the IPL. Yeah. And all this knowledge is being passed into the Indian domestic infrastructure. It can only continue to explode. And I don't know if there's an end or what the end looks like in terms of Indian talent based on the knowledge that they're obtaining on a yearly basis.
Yeah, no, I agree. Do you think there's a way, you talked about before then about making it obviously longer and it becoming this sort of like, you know, biggest, well, it's obviously the biggest franchise tournament, but do you think there's a way where they could do a tiered system where you could have like a promotion and a relegation where they used to be able to bring more teams in and allow a structure where in the tier one, they obviously have the budget, a larger budget, and then under tier two, maybe a bit more of a structure to funnel it in. Do you think that could work?
I don't think that would work because there's no second tier there. So it's not, for example, you've got the Premier League, you've got Championship, you've got Div 1, Div 2 football in the UK.
Yeah.
In cricket, there's no such system that replicates that. So it's literally just the IPL, and then you have probably each state has their own domestic T20 competitions. If there were like a Championship, for example, a Div 1, Div 2, then obviously it would be a lot more feasible to have a promotion and relegation type system. But at the moment, I don't think that it will work. What I do think, though, is because of the amount of highly talented domestic players in India.
Yeah.
I mean, you think of who's playing now, and there's probably the same amount, if not double, talented players not involved in the IPL. So that's where you see it become a lot easier to add 4, 5, 6 extra teams to the tournament as it is. And the international pool is still the international pool. I mean, you're talking about the top 10% of international cricketers being active in the IPL right now. It would just be a matter of stretching it to the top 15-20%. And you still have a very highly skilled, highly successful tournament.
And that's why I asked that question, whether you could tier it. I know, I understand what you're saying in terms of how you'd split it at all, but you look at some of the top players in the Ranji Trophy, some of these stats are frightening across first-class cricket, across worldwide, and some of them don't, and some of them don't feature in the IPL. And you think, well, how do you not? You're probably arguably going to walk into some of the other, you know, so many other franchise opportunities. And that's when I thought to myself, when I was looking, is there a way, like, and that probably is by extending the teams. But I suppose, like you said, I don't know how you would split it to make it into that tiered structure so you could get the promotion. Maybe you don't need to have that. Maybe, like you say, you mean just make it bigger and longer and it'll naturally become more competitive the more teams you throw in there anyway.
correct. Because if you tier it, for example, how do you say to a Mumbai Indians, for example, if they have a bad season and they are to be relegated, having spent how many hundreds of millions that you're relegated, you're playing championship next season,
yeah,
it necessarily won't work. But I think I would definitely love to see it extended in terms of the number of teams.
Yeah.
And I know that they have just extended. I mean, we do have two relatively new teams in the Gujarat and the Lucknow team.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, just the sheer population of India, the size of India, and the amount of money in India, there will continue to be expansion of the IPL over time, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And it's I was looking as well, there's, you know, we talk about the PSL then. I think there's maybe five or six, maybe more, who go straight from the PSL straight to, you know, straight into India, straight, you know, from finishing the PSL into the IPL straight away.
Is that the PSL final, or is that just the PSL in general?
I think
that has to be the PSL final, isn't it?
Yeah, I think David Willey played yesterday, and then he'll go straight. I think he goes straight there. And the other ones I looked at were the likes of, I think, Rahman Powell, he goes, but I don't think he played in the final. Sikander Raz is going. So there's a few, but I'm not sure about, I think there's only maybe a couple from the final who went straight, that will go straight into India then.
I mean, even Shea, obviously, who's part of us, has gone straight from the PSL to the IPL. And it's a good thing in a sense, because players get that time, get acclimated to that time zone, you know, playing in those conditions. There's not very much conditional changes from Pakistan and India. So it sort of helps them in terms of their preparation heading into the IPL as well, which is good. But no, I think on a whole, the T20 ecosystem, I mean, you look at it, we just had the conclusion of the BPL not too long before that as well.
No.
And as well, you had the Big Bash and the ILT20. So it's all sort of culminating into the major event being the IPL, which is what everyone sort of looks at. And then you sort of start the cycle again with, I guess, the 100, the Major League and the Caribbean Premier League.
Yeah, well, then obviously don't. And then we've got the, in between that, it goes back to the World Cup starting again in June. So, you know, there's going to be some. This is the other thing as well with the positive impact is you'll start to see, in my opinion, some of the nations who've had the players featuring the three, like you said there, so you've gone Big Bash, ILT20, BPL, PSL, IPL. The players who played in a lot of those are going to be, you know, all working towards that T20 to World Cup, which have a massive positive impact for that nation.
Well, what I think is going to be interesting more so than anything is the conditions for the T20 World Cup, because obviously the grounds in the US, no one really knows much about. Yes. And most of the grounds in the Caribbean are being overhauled at the moment, that are going to be participating in the T20 World Cup. So there's lots of unknowns in terms of surfaces, playing areas for the World Cup. What's a good score? What's not a good score?
Yeah.
Will this play as it traditionally played, being Caribbean surfaces? Will they be, I guess, different? No. With the amounts of preparation that have gone into them, leading into the T20 World Cup, I think you'll see a lot of teams opt in to bowl first.
I was going to say, they'll choose to chase, won't they?
Based on obviously being unknown conditions, how much of a factor will that play into the end result? Will there be due, obviously, games being played at night, T20 matches? So will there be a due factor or not? Obviously, the heat won't necessarily matter, as it's extremely hot in the Caribbean at the moment.
Yeah.
But being played at night, that sort of won't matter. But yeah, no, just looking forward to that. And obviously, you guys playing with each other for so many different teams, and then coming to compete at the T20 World Cup for their countries, you know, the knowledge of each other and how they play is going to be optimal. And that's where you see an extreme test of skills to be able to withstand someone that knows sort of your game inside out.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to it as well. And, you know, I just hope, I know we spoke about it in December, I think it was our January, about part of the infrastructure side of things in the USA and making sure that everything, you know, goes to plan, especially with India playing Pakistan in New York and stuff like that. But, you know, you'd like to think that, you know, since we spoke and, you know, leading up to June, that everything will go to plan, because I think it's got, a massive opportunity to really open, you know, plenty of opportunities within that USA market.
Yeah, no, 100%. That would be absolutely amazing. And I think, obviously, strategically from the ICC, they've placed both India and Pakistan in the US, with there being a high number of Asian expats, not just from India and Pakistan, but Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, all these places as well.
Yeah,
that will come out to watch these games. It's unfortunate for the Caribbean that they don't get to, I guess, see India unless they get all the way to the semifinals, which is probably expected of them anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say it did probably.
Yeah, but no, it's going to be an interesting tournament.
No. Definitely. And I just want to sort of finish a little bit. We touched on it there. We Shea, obviously, playing for the Delhi Capitals. I think I'm really looking forward to that. I know it's been, you know, yourself and Emma obviously have been involved with Shea for a long time. And I think with him, when he got drafted, you know, it was quite a touching message I received off Emma when she was sort of saying to me about, you know, we said that we'd get there, and it felt really nice in the fact of like that progression, you know, and the journey. And I just hope that he, you know, with him being there in India now, he goes and takes that opportunity and shows the whole world, which he has done obviously numerous times. But as we spoke about from this franchise perspective, it could be, you know, absolutely life changing across absolutely everything. And I just hope that we get to see the best of him and he really does flourish out there.
Yeah, I think, obviously, knowing him and even just looking on, if you're not someone that knows him very well, you can see that he's someone that obviously takes his opportunities and maximizes chances.
Definitely.
Hence, his record being what it is. And even a few years back, I know when him and Emma sort of had a conversation based around wanting to get into T20 leagues and obviously making a switch, for example, to the Guyana team in the Amazon Warriors in the CPL, getting more opportunities, then sort of getting into BPL and PSL and now the IPL. And it's been, as you mentioned in that message from Eva, it's been a progression. It's been a planned thing. And, you know, I'm pretty sure whenever he gets an opportunity, he will find a way to make it work.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's a... You know, it's nice to see that journey, and like you said there about the strategy side of things, people probably don't see that side of things that comes comes with it in terms of, you know, taking that step back and thinking about the bigger picture and the strategy in terms of how to make it work. So, you know, I think that the impact he'll have as well for the West Indies, especially being the captain in the 50 over stuff, but obviously his participation as well in the T20 stuff, is the experience he'll gather. And we spoke about obviously from the coaching side of things, so I think he'll be working with Ricky Ponting, which is, you know, going to be a fabulous experience, and he'll have a fantastic knock-on effect to all the sides he plays in, whether that is in the CPL or whether it's, you know, in the 50 over stuff or the T20 stuff. So it's it's going to be really, really good for him and for everyone else involved.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. And obviously, the main thing is West Indies cricket at this point in time. And, you know, personally, I'd like to see the West Indians do really well out there going into the T20 World Cup. The last thing that you want is for most of the guys to be sat on the bench for two and a half months, not getting much game time, and then coming into a T20 World Cup underprepared, which won't leave the West Indies in a good spot.
No.
So hopefully they can get some solid game time, good preparation, and coming in feeling in form and in a good space to be able to try and win a World Cup on home soil.
No, definitely, definitely. But anyway, thank you for today, and I hope that you know, all the best for tomorrow, and I hope the wrist holds up okay, and you know, we can carry on your rich vein of form, and we'll speak soon.
Cheers, John. Speak soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us on the Power Play podcast, hosted by Kyron Powell and Jordan Shannon. We hope you enjoyed this immersive dive into the world of cricket and business, exploring the unique experiences and perspectives of players past and present, alongside those invaluable insights into intriguing business themes that transcend beyond the boundaries of sporting heroics. Be sure to set your reminders on your Alexa or Google Home device. Or we won't tell anyone if you still use those paper calendar things from a bygone era. Join us next time for more inspiring dialogue with scintillating minds on the Power Play podcast.